Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
It's 10 p.m. in London, 7 a.m. in Tokyo, and 6 p.m. here in New York. I'm Julia Chatterley, and wherever you are in the world, this is your First Move. A very warm welcome, as always, to First Move, and here's your need to know. Israel describes Hamas's latest ceasefire proposal as, quote, ridiculous, but will still send negotiators to talks in the next week. In the U.S. state of Georgia, a judge rules the district attorney in the Trump's election interference case can stay on, but the prosecutor she hired will step aside. We'll explain what that means for the future of the case. And time to tickle the ivories with Chinese pianist Long Long.
Music is a way to get into people's heart.
Wow, if music be the food of love, play on. My conversation with the legendary performer and more coming right up. But first, Israel calling the latest set of ceasefire proposals from Hamas, quote, ridiculous and absurd. It does say, however, that it's planning to send negotiators to Qatar in the coming days. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he signed off on a military action plan in Rafah. Close to 1.5 million Palestinians are in southern Gaza, raising fears about how this operation would impact those civilians. Ceasefire negotiations seem far from reaching a solution. Here's U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
We have conversations that are happening now as we speak here, and I am convinced they'll go on into the coming days. Israel has sent back a negotiating team to pursue this, and I think it reflects the sense both of possibility and of urgency to get an agreement, to get a ceasefire, to get the hostages back, to get even more humanitarian assistance in.
And just hours ago, Gaza received its first shipment of humanitarian aid by sea since the war began. But on Thursday, Gaza's Ministry of Health accused Israeli troops of shelling Palestinians as they were waiting for food, killing at least 20. That's a claim Israel's military denies. Jeremy Diamond joins us now from Jerusalem. Jeremy, much to discuss. Let's talk about that aid delivery. Obviously urgently required, though the aid agencies that are working there keep saying it's not a sustainable solution and doesn't compare to the truck deliveries we saw. The question for me now is, how do they safely distribute this food aid given the level of desperation there?
Yeah, that certainly is the question. And look, this initial delivery is apparently going to provide more than 500,000 meals. But as you mentioned, it is only a drop in the enormous ocean of need in northern Gaza, where about 500,000 people are on the brink of famine. Cases of acute malnutrition and even deaths from starvation are rapidly rising. But we know that those meals were then offloaded onto World Central Kitchen trucks. They will be distributed in northern Gaza. But we know, of course, that there are major security concerns. In the past, those aid convoys have repeatedly been swarmed by desperate people in northern Gaza just trying to survive. There have also, of course, been instances of violence surrounding the aid distribution, cases of Israeli gunfire, last night, questions about whether the Israeli military may have shelled an aid distribution point, which is the allegation made by the Palestinian health authorities. Meanwhile, the Israeli military says that Palestinian gunmen opened fire on that aid distribution point before an aid convoy came through. But regardless, it all speaks, of course, to the desperate humanitarian situation on the ground and the dangers associated with that. We also know, of course, that the most effective way to get more aid in is via land. And on that front, we know that the Israeli military over the past week allowed for the first time an aid convoy to go in directly from Israel into northern Gaza via a gate in the security fence between Gaza and Israel. That was a pilot program, but we may hopefully see more of that in the weeks to come.
Yeah, Jeremy, as you keep pointing out, though, this is something, but it's not the optimal solution for getting aid in there. Prime Minister Netanyahu saying today that the military are ready for the Rafah operation in the south. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken saying that they'd not seen a plan of how they're going to protect the civilians, hundreds of thousands of them in this area. My initial thought was perhaps the suggestion that this plan was ready was a negotiating tactic. Then we see the Israelis' response to Hamas's proposals for a ceasefire and calling them absurd and ridiculous. Where are we on this?
Yeah, those negotiations, look, certainly there is some momentum now. There is at least some movement. But the question is, how big is the gap that remains to be bridged? We know that while Hamas has presented a latest counterproposal to the Qatari and Egyptian mediators to get the ball rolling here, what they are still asking for, some 700 to 1,000 Palestinian prisoners in a first stage of a hostage release deal that would see some 40 Israeli hostages released, is still a much, much higher ratio than what the Israeli government is prepared to accept at this stage. So the question now is, will the Israeli government be willing to show more flexibility to come down from its position, or will the two sides remain at an impasse? For the moment, it appears that there is some cautious optimism in the air. But again, that remains to be seen. Next week, the Israeli government set to send a delegation to Qatar to pursue these negotiations. Hopefully, we will have a better sense then of whether or not there is some possibility in the air. Julia.
Yeah, we'll watch those talks very closely. Jeremy Diamond, thank you for now. Meanwhile, Ukraine says a Russian missile attack on the port city of Odessa was the deadliest since the full-scale invasion began. At least 20 people lost their lives and 73 others were injured, according to Ukrainian forces. President Zelensky said two missiles were used and the second landed when emergency services arrived at the scene. He called it, quote, a despicable act of cowardice. Okay, here in the United States, Donald Trump's election interference case in Georgia will continue after a judge ruled that District Attorney Funny Willis can remain on the case, but only if the prosecutor she hired and was in a relationship with resigns. He did so a few hours ago. There are plenty of other developments, too, this week in the Trump legal dramas. Let's go case by case. In the classified documents trial, a Florida judge heard the defense argue why the charges should be dropped. The judge denied one of the claims and said she'll rule on the other soon. In New York, in the last hour, the judge in the Stormy Daniels hush money case has agreed to delay the start of the trial. Now, it was supposed to begin on March 25th. A new trial date has not been set. Nick Valencia has more.
Tonight, the lead prosecutor on the Georgia election subversion case against Donald Trump and his allies stepping down. He says, in the interest of democracy, in dedication to the American public, and to move this case forward as quickly as possible. Nathan Wade handing in his resignation letter hours after Judge Scott McAfee ruled District Attorney Fani Willis could stay on the case only if Wade goes. Willis accepting the resignation of the man with whom she was romantically involved, writing, "I will always remember and will remind everyone that you were brave enough to step forward and take on the investigation and prosecution." In his ruling, McAfee concluding the defense failed to prove Willis financially benefited from hiring Wade. But this finding is by no means an indication that the court condones this tremendous lapse in judgment or the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during the evidentiary hearing. Judge Scott McAfee wrote, "Rather, it is the undersigned's opinion that Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices. McAfee also describing Willis's fiery testimony last month as unprofessional.
You've been intrusive into people's personal lives. You're confused. You think I'm on trial. These people are on trial for trying to steal an election in 2020. I'm not on trial, no matter how hard you try to put me on trial.
And her January remarks at an Atlanta area church as legally improper.
First thing they say, oh, she gonna play the race card now. But no, God, isn't it them who's playing the race card when they only question one?
The judge also saying reasonable questions exist about the timing of Willis and Wade's relationship.
When did your romantic relationship with Ms. Willis begin?
2022.
McAfee writing, the district attorney chose to continue supervising and paying Wade while maintaining such a relationship. As long as Wade remains on the case, this unnecessary perception will persist.
I don't think it's a good day for the justice system.
Defense attorney Scott Grubman faced off against Willis during the case when he represented Trump ally Ken Chesbrough, one of the four co-defendants, to take a guilty plea.
I hope and expect that the criminal defense lawyers in this case will appeal this decision, and I hope the Georgia Court of Appeals has a different view than Scott McAfee.
She's not equipped to do the job, and that case should end immediately.
The former president's legal team vowing to fight on. We will use all legal options available as we continue to fight to end this case, which should never have been brought in the first place, attorney Steve Sadow said.
And CNN legal analyst Joey Jackson joins us now. Joey, great to have you with us. So just to be clear, the case against Trump now still stands, but the district attorney, Fani Willis, stays on the job. The prosecutor she appointed and was in a relationship with has been forced to resign. And I think the conduct of the entire district attorney's office has been called into question. The case may still stand, but really, how do you proceed? It's a mess. It feels like a mess.
You know, you're right, Julia, and it quite frankly is a mess. And I think what the judge did in drawing the conclusion that the special prosecutor, Nathan Wade, of course, who submitted his resignation, has to go, was attempting to right the wrong. And by what wrong I'm speaking of is that you have to have a judicial system that has public confidence, that the public believes is designed to protect really the rights of the accused. In this case, of course, Mr. Trump and 18 other defendants, now 14. We know that four pled guilty, including three attorneys. And I think the judge is very concerned about the optics of it, about the way the system is viewed, and that a prosecution has to proceed fairly. And by taking the step of saying the case may move forward as long as the special counsel Nathan Wade resigns, I think the judge took the first step to ensure that there would be some propriety to this. And so it'll move forward. As we look there at Fani Willis, she will be in charge and at the helm. And so the issue will be whether she can prosecute the case based on the facts, based on the law, and in a way that comports with fairness, justice, and the appropriateness upon which the criminal justice system in the United States is based.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the questions. There is a section in this report, and I don't really want to get into the details of it for the audience, but where the judge raises reasonable questions about whether or not the district attorney and the prosecutor perhaps lied on the stand about the timing of when they entered a relationship. I mean, that to me is sort of raising questions about whether a district attorney actually lied officially on the stand in front of a judge. Joey, can Trump's defense use that and say, look, no one trusts this office. How can you trust anything that any of these individuals are saying?
Yeah, it's a great point, Julia. So let's go big picture and then small picture. The big picture is the judge assessed it and said, listen, I'm going to assess this in three ways. The first way is there a conflict of interest? Was there financial benefit to the prosecutor by virtue of appointing her boyfriend and then essentially going on this trip? The judge said that there was no financial connection. At least it did not rise to the level of an actual conflict of interest. To the point that you just were speaking of in terms of when the relationship started, were there fabrications, misrepresentations by the parties? The judge said, while there's not an actual conflict, there could be a perceived conflict, right? And so based upon that, said there has to be removal. And then the final portion of it dealt with really statements that were made by Fani Willis outside the court at a church on one Sunday. And when she waxed poetic about why the defense team was going after her, talking about Jesus Christ, talking about, you know, black men and black women, et cetera, judge didn't like that. But at the end of the day, coming to your point and concluding on your point, listen, it smacks of a mess. And so the real question going to the small picture, which is this case, is that at the end of the day, there's an indictment. An indictment is an accusation. That's how cases are brought in the United States. Are the facts underlying that indictment criminal? Can they be proven in a court of law? Will there be a trial that moves forward? When will that be? Will there be a jury who can fairly assess those facts? This was a sideshow having nothing to do with the merits of the case itself, only those who were prosecuting the case. And so the issues will be on the allegations in the indictment moving forward. Can you get a fair trial on that? And I think that's what the judge really wants to focus on at this point, leaving this rabbit hole and this distraction behind. We'll see whether or not that actually occurs, Julia, in the months moving forward.
Yeah, something tells me the rabbit's going to chase you, bouncing along behind you. There's a court of law and then there's a court of public opinion, quite frankly. And I think it's been unholy damaged in the process. And I think the former president can argue that this is all part of a bigger system that's trying to take him down. Just answering very quickly, one of the points that you raised there, timing. Is there any chance this happens before the presidential election? And I think so an international audience also can understand. If he were found guilty in this case, and I know it's an enormous if at this moment, what's the maximum sentence? So two questions, timing and maximum sentence. Why this really matters?
Sure. Of course. So just addressing the timing issue, Julie, the timing is very doubtful that it will get tried, not only relating to this case, because there could be an appeal of the judge's decision, which would delay it further. But remember, the president faces a total of four cases. This is one of them. You have a New York case that was just pushed back. It was slated to go forward on March 25th. It's now will go forward in April. You have that case. You have two federal cases. And so the timing issue, it's very doubtful that it would move forward. In terms of the maximum, if he were to be convicted, I mean, this is a RICO prosecution, Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization Act. By virtue of that, you can do decades in jail. Whether he would get that or not is the ultimate question. Would he be convicted is an even better question. But there's certainly tremendous exposure criminally should the president ultimately be tried and potentially convicted by a jury of his peers in Georgia.
Yeah. And either way, one thing that has been achieved in this is further delays. Joey Jackson, great to have you with us. Thank you so much for your wisdom.
Thank you.
Now, the click of a button may have been behind the LATAM Airlines plunge and not any flaw in the Boeing jet, at least according to a report in the Wall Street Journal. It claims a flight attendant may have activated a switch on the pilot's seat that moved it towards the controls that ultimately led to the Dreamliner dropping midair, injuring around 50 people. Now, Boeing also issued an alert to airlines about 787 cockpit seats just this week. Funny that. The Federal Aviation Authority is reviewing that proposal. Pete Muntean explains.
The Boeing announcement to airlines to say that they should inspect the pilot seats, combined with reporting from the Wall Street Journal, really raises a new set of alarm and a new warning for investigators to look deeper into this account about the pilot seats. The account from the Wall Street Journal, after speaking to two U.S. officials, says that there was a flight attendant on board in the cockpit of this 787 serving meals on Monday when they accidentally bumped into a switch on the back of the seats here on the 787. That switch will actually actuate the seat fore and aft. It's located right about here, and that can slide the seat fore and aft on an L-shaped track. It's covered by this plastic panel here. You flip that panel up, you can move the switch into two positions. The track is here, and the thinking is that the seat went toward the control column here and ended up pushing the control column forward and the nose of the airplane down. That was a really scary moment for a lot of passengers on board. Ultimately, about 50 passengers treated after this flight landed in Auckland, New Zealand, about 12 of them seriously. And they said that they were thrown up to the ceiling of the airplane. It really flies in the face of the account that passengers got from one of the pilots as they were exiting the plane, that the pilot said that their screens initially went dark, causing them to briefly lose control of the airplane. So this is something where the investigators will also need to look at the cockpit voice recorder and the flight data recorder. The flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder make up the two black boxes. The flight data recorder will be key because it'll be able to show if the linear movement of the seat translated into the linear movement on the control column here. Also the cockpit voice recorder will be key, because the sensitive microphones inside the cockpit, that will be able to pick up if there was some sort of struggle with the seat. If somebody said, hey, stop, 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 the seat is moving.
Okay, coming up for us, your weekend weather forecast just ahead. Plus, McDonald's global operations in a pickle after a widespread systems outage. Do not blame the Hamburglar. We'll tell you what really went wrong next. Plus, from Mendelssohn to Marley and even Metallica, world-renowned pianist Long Long has done it all. We'll discuss his new album and the power of music to build bridges. Plus, his thoughts on how AI can boost creativity. And just by the way, it's not replacing either of us anytime soon. Good news. All that and more ahead.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back to First Move, and to all our UK, US and Latin American viewers, we hope you're having a wonderful Friday evening. And for everyone waking up across Asia, happy Saturday and lucky you. In today's Money Move, an Ides of March downward march for US stocks on Friday, with the S&P 500 falling for a second straight week. This week's hotter than expected US inflation data forcing investors perhaps to begin dialing back expectations for the number of Fed rate cuts this year, and that having an impact. No happy faces on Wall Street and fewer happy meals apparently at McDonald's, the fast food giant suffering a global system outage on Friday that forced the closure of restaurants worldwide for hours. McDonald's is apologizing to customers and says it was not a cyber attack, but problems with a third-party tech provider. The news helping pressure McDonald's stock, which fell almost 1%. Now, a bit of a Friday feeling too across Asia. Chinese stocks gaining, but sharp losses in Hong Kong and South Korea. Japan also pulling back during the session, as you can see there. Just a quarter of a percent, though, for the Nikkei. Now, as we've been warning all week, parts of the US Midwest reeling from severe storms, which caused the death of at least three people. The National Weather Service reported tornadoes through eastern Indiana and western Ohio. The storms knocked out power and flattened buildings. Earlier, my colleague Whitney Wild was on the ground in Winchester, Indiana, reporting on the dramatic impact of the storm. Just watch this.
Let me just show you something that I think really highlights the scale and the ferocity of this storm. Look at how high these sheets of metal are, Rahel. I mean, I'm 5'7". This is several feet taller than me. And what this storm did, the power of this storm, took these large sheets of metal and just draped them around this light pole here in Winchester. I mean, they are almost turned from sheets of steel into fabric. It's unbelievable when you come out here. And I think this image really helps highlight the scale.
Whitney Wild talking to my colleague Rahel Solomon earlier. And unfortunately, that severe weather threat isn't over. Chad Myers joins us now. Chad, I'm afraid to look. What more can we expect? The damage and destruction already vast.
You know, again tonight over Texas and the Gulf Coast, we have severe thunderstorm warnings going on and watches going on, but not the tornado watches like we had last night. This is the good news here. There were very large tornadoes. I mean, 135 and greater miles per hour, 220 kph in some spots. But I want you to take a look at this little tornado. And I say that with a grain of salt, but a little tornado, likely 90 or 100 miles per hour, but just 3 minutes later. Notice there's the barn right there. The same barn is still in the shot, but this now is not a 80, 90 mile per hour, 120 kph tornado. This is a monster tornado on the ground doing damage. And this is what we saw last night. There were at least a dozen reports of tornadoes, and they're still counting. The National Weather Service goes out and takes a look how much was done, how many buildings were hit, how strong the buildings were that were hit, and that's how they know how big the storms are. If you just get a tornado in the middle of a wheat field, it doesn't really get a big rating, no matter how big it is, because it didn't hit anything and there was no damage. So we're still watching the storms here along the Gulf. We're watching storms into Houston at this hour, likely getting some airport delays there without a doubt. You get that much lightning around Houston Hobby or into International. That's going to see the area tomorrow, probably the same area, going to see significant tornado possibility, but really more a significant hail possibility as we work our way into the rest of the afternoon. Taking a look now, good morning to you across parts of East Asia. It will cool down a little bit in your forecast, but really for you Tokyo, you're going to be in the upper teens to almost 20 degrees, but the drop down again comes in from 19 to 21, and then all of a sudden on Monday, you're 13. So enjoy your weekend. Seoul, you'll go from 17 to 11, and even Beijing, a few degrees cooler. But this is still above normal. This is more than we should be having here for temperatures at this time of year. Still a little bit tropical season here in Australia, the Northern Territory, going to pick up an awful lot of rainfall. Not a lot of people in the way of this, but it's still going to rapidly intensify to about 150 kilometer per hour storm as it comes in and puts all of that rainfall down across the central part of the Northern Territory. Julia.
Chad, a comprehensive report. Happy weekend. Thank you very
all
much.
All over the
that.
World.
As always, thank you. All right, coming up on First Move, one of the most frequent questions I got when traveling in Hong Kong and Tokyo. I'll tell you, what's the prospect of a Trump presidency Mark II? Hear what the region is thinking. Next. Welcome back to First Move. Isolated protests have been reported as Russians go to the polls to vote for a president. Video shows apparent defacing of ballots with green dye at several polling stations. Friday was the first of 3 days to vote in the election. And Matthew Chance has the latest from Moscow.
The re-election of Vladimir Putin may be underway, with Russians dutifully casting their votes across this vast country. But there are unexpected signs of public defiance. In the Russian capital, a young woman pours dye into a ballot box before being detained by police. In the city of Voronezh, an old lady is being held by election officials for doing the same thing. You can see the ruined votes stained bright green. An act of defiance that could mean a lengthy term in a Russian penal colony. On the eve of this vote, amid simmering opposition despair at the sudden death of Alexei Navalny, Russia's most prominent Kremlin critic, who was himself once infamously attacked with green antiseptic dye. Russian authorities have warned attempts at disruption would be treated as a serious offence.
For the Kremlin, this is meant to be a show of resounding national unity, with Russians coming together in support at the ballot box for Vladimir Putin. The Russian opposition hasn't even been allowed to take part, and the three candidates who are standing are neither anti-Putin, anti-Ukraine war, or even popular with the Russian electorate. In other words, the Kremlin is taking absolutely no chances with the outcome of this vote.
But in one Moscow polling station, a voting booth is set on fire. An onlooker tries to douse the flames with water. Before police grab the suspect. Outside a St. Petersburg polling station, a protester lobs a petrol bomb at the front door. before being wrestled to the ground. Not everyone, it seems, is willing to let this Putin reappointment go unchallenged. Matthew Chatz, CNN Moscow.
Now, there can be no denying it's going to be a tight race for the White House this year. President Biden has a mere 1 percentage point lead over former President Trump in the latest Reuters Ipsos poll. I mean, clearly, that's well within the margin of error. But it's not just US citizens that are wondering what happens and how from China to Taiwan. People are also asking there what this might mean for them and the region. Will Ripley explores.
In the Chinese capital, Beijing, no shortage of people sounding off about Donald Trump.
I think Trump will probably get elected because he's pretty good.
If Trump were to be elected, he will undermine us even more through economic blockades or tariffs, or he could instigate wars.
Publicly, the Chinese government is playing neutral, criticizing the U.S.-China policies of former President Trump and current President Joe Biden. State media mocking the messiness of American democracy, political chaos, deep division. On Chinese social media, comments like these. Are these two old guys all they've got left? Old against old. They both are tough on China. We need to speed up our preparation for battle. And this prediction, Trump is going to be back. Remember 6 years ago when then-President Trump traveled to Beijing? Chinese leader Xi Jinping pulled out all the stops. The lavish state banquet inside the Forbidden City, a first for any U.S. president since 1949, the founding of Communist China.
My feeling toward you is an incredibly warm one. As we said, there's great chemistry.
China's rulers have historically preferred leaders they can manipulate through personal relationships and flattery. Trump's ego-driven diplomacy seemed at the time like a perfect match.
I think we're going to do tremendous things for both China and for the United States.
Then came the trade war. Trump's tariffs and trade barriers, since bolstered by President Biden, still battering Beijing's economy. Now, Trump says U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods will skyrocket to 60% or higher if he wins a second term. China's top diplomat Wang Yi, voicing concerns over those U.S. trade and tech controls, warning of bewildering levels of unfathomable absurdity. But experts say some aspects of Trump's foreign policy actually benefit China's strategic interests. His doubts about traditional American alliances like NATO, admiration for strongmen like Russia's Vladimir Putin and North Korea's Kim Jong-un.
If I were a Chinese leader or in the Chinese leadership, I would be worried about Trump's presidency simply because Trump is just less predictable.
That unpredictability on display this week. Trump abruptly reversed his hardline stance on TikTok, opposing a bipartisan bill that would essentially ban the Chinese-owned app in the U.S.
There are a lot of people on TikTok that love it. There are a lot of young kids on TikTok who will go crazy without it.
Trump himself tried to ban TikTok in 2020, citing a national security threat. U-turns like this could inject even more instability in a fraught U.S.-China relationship.
Will Ripley, CNN, Taipei.
Something to soothe you now. Coming up, a classic musical superstar who's truly a class act. Pianist Lung Lung talks to me about his just-released double album and the power of music to unite us in a divided world. How appropriate. Plus, the powerful piano music that took even him by surprise.
I start listening. I said, where does this music come from? And who are the composers?
We'll reveal all, a special interview with a very special musician next.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to First Move. One of the most beloved classical musicians of our time, Chinese pianist Long Long, has been delighting audiences since his first ever public recital at the tender age of 5. Yes, you heard me right. Since then, he's toured the world, released a number of best-selling albums, and has made it his mission to teach the wonders of music to children, including his young son. He's just out with a brand new 2-disc release named after the French composer Saint-Saëns that also happens to feature his wife, fellow pianist Gina Alice. The new album showcases the work of French composers, the most world-famous and the more obscure. Now, I talked to Long Long about his remarkable career, his very talented family, and the music on the new album that touched a profound chord in him.
First of all, I mean, I've been hearing some incredible music, and they just, you know, my friend just sent me some beautiful piano music, and I start listening. I said, where does this music come from, and who are the composers? It sounds so beautiful, but I never heard those music before. So then it turns to all those great compositions was made by female composers, and they're Parisian, they're French. Their music's so beautiful, and it's so it touches our the sixth sense. You know, the way they make music is even more prettier, you know, than what we normally hearing those male composers. And, you know, they give you this wonderful, homey feelings when you listen to this music.
Yeah, surrounds you in some form of warmth, which I think is the part, at least, of the beauty of music. And certainly you've discussed that. I've read in the past. It sort of ties me back to the work of your foundation in particular, and educating and inspiring young people to find, I think, exactly that in many ways, that the joy, the passion, the warmth, the beauty that music can provide. Just talk to me about the work of the foundation and why this is such an important part of the work that you do.
Yeah, we started to work with the public schools in the world. We have almost 100 schools in America, which we are working with as a keys of inspiration music class. And in China, we have 110 schools, and we changed the name. We called the Happy Keyboard, because the interesting thing is that in the Western world, when you talk about classical music, people is like, you know, some kid is like, it's not very inspirational, it's a bit boring. So that's why we changed the name, you know, not called the music class, but the Keys of Inspiration. You know, and in Asia, particularly, you know, where I grew up, sometimes people feel that music class can be very unhappy, a lot of hard work. You get forced by your parents, you know, like so much practice. But actually making music is a happy thing.
You know, it's funny, I've read this about you as well, where you said that, and you touched on it there, that you were pressured as you were growing up to play music, and actually it worked out well for you because, you know, this is your chosen career and you're incredibly talented, but you didn't want to make Winston, your son, feel that same pressure. How do you, I think, as a parent, find that balance? Because sometimes children would rather do other things perhaps, but it's nice to play a musical instrument. How do you make it fun?
Yeah, I mean, for example, some kid loves music, but they don't like to practice. I mean, this is a very general
I was one of those.
I think, yeah. good for you.
It worked better for you.
Who you become. And you have to find a way to kind of lead them into, you know, making of the music. You need to take them into the progress, which is very, very difficult. For example, my son loves to play the music around, but it's hard for him to sit to really do it. He loves the cello somehow, and because everything he really got interested were the lower voice, you know, like either it's like, and this little boy starting to sing like this, it was crazy. I mean, in my opinion, every kid should learn at least one instrument, because this experience will make their life so much more interesting.
You mentioned Gina Ellis, your beautiful wife, because I know you do a duet in this as well. And she is obviously incredibly talented. Do you ever have artistic differences? Do you ever say to her, look, how about you do it this way? And she says, absolutely not. Like, this is the way I'm doing it.
I think it happens a few times in this project. Yeah, because I'm always like criticizing her playing, and one day she got crazy. She said, no, I'm just going to play like that. I said, okay, whatever.
You obviously grew up in China, but now you travel the world and you speak to other people. Can I ask you what you think is the most obvious cultural misunderstanding that you see around the world between a nation such as China and anywhere else, and that perhaps music does help to bridge? Where's the obvious misunderstandings? Yeah.
Even though we're so different culturally, the Western culture and the Eastern world, there's a really huge difference. I mean, there's some culture gap as well. But through music, through poetry or novels, we also felt that there's a lot of similarities. So therefore, I think music is a way to get into people's heart with more concert exchanging programs. This is especially among the younger generation. This is much easier to connect, actually.
Quick question. AI, generative AI. There's a lot of performance artists that I think are concerned about what it means for composing, what it means for playing. We've all seen these pianos that, you know, play themselves. Not that they use AI, but perhaps one day it's coming. Mm. What does AI mean to you as a performance artist?
I think AI... Yeah, I think AI is a very good tool for education. In a moment, for our programs, we actually use softwares. It's not exactly like AI, but it's similar. You know, you can use the firm method, which you can use connect the piano to the computer, so you can have a very interesting and kind of adventurous tools. To inspire kid. Composition, I heard some compositions which composed by the AI. It's not there yet. So in a way that we are not destroyed.
Not this week. Final question. What would you have been if you weren't a pianist?
Maybe a talk show host? No, I'm just...
I like. Oh, no, now you're coming for my job.
No. I mean, I like to... Yeah, I think a few things that I like to, to interview. I like to have conversations with people. I like to be a teacher, I would say. I think that will probably work, something with communication world, I think will be nice.
Yeah, I think you would have done a great job. No. We can swap any time, although my piano limitations are to chopsticks, so I'm not sure the audience will be so happy.
I will interview you how to do the first piano concert.
It'll be a short one. Probably a short interview as well. Thank you to Long Long there. All right, coming up, baseball superstars in Korea for the first ever Seoul series, but the players are not the only ones to take center stage. We'll explain next. Welcome back. A big baseball weekend for Korea. The LA Dodgers and San Diego Padres will have exhibition games as the Major League Baseball is set to hold its first ever regular season opener in Seoul next week. But the person who's actually stealing the show appears to be Shohei Ohtani's wife. Patrick Snell joins me now. We're very interested in the sport. We're more interested in their love lives.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Thanks, Julia. Yeah, there has been more than a bit of a buzz, shall we say. That was last month when one of the most recognized and respected players in baseball announced he'd married, but he didn't mention who he'd married at the time, at least. Well, thankfully, on Thursday this week, Ohtani sharing a picture of his wife, Mamiko Tanaka, who traveled with the superstar and his LA Dodgers to Seoul, South Korea for a two-game series to officially open up the 2024 Major League Baseball season against the San Diego Padres. Tanaka, by the way, also quite the athlete as well, having played basketball for Japan at the national level as well. So there's that famous pick there. But as you mentioned, Julia, truly historic occasion for South Korea, a baseball-mad country which has provided no shortage of stars to the MLB. The Padres, by the way, have two Korean-born players and two Japanese players on their roster as well, including their starting pitcher for Game 1 Wednesday in Seoul, Yu Darvish. But most eyes, no question, will likely be on Ohtani, who is the current most valuable player from the American League's LA Angels, who signed with crosstown rivals the Dodgers the past December, late last year it was. This is a player everyone wanted to see. Look at these scenes here. He turned the baseball world on its head. Remember, with his double talent of both hitting and pitching the ball, that just doesn't happen in the modern era anymore. But Julia, I will say this. This year, the 29-year-old Japanese star will only be a hitter. Why? Because he had that recent elbow surgery, and that will prevent him from pitching until next year. But look at the crowds. Look at the scenes there. Absolutely incredible scenes. As I send it right back to you.
Yes, lots of excitement, as you can see there. And amazing Eve is even doing half of his skills given that surgery. Patrick, fantastic to have you with us. Happy weekend.
And to you.
Thank you. Now, Japan is marking the passing of a true cultural legend. It was announced Friday that electronics expert Shigeshi Nagishi has passed away at the age of 100 years old. Now, you may not know him by name, but you're surely familiar with his monumental invention. Yes, he's the man that bought the world the karaoke singing machine back in 1967. The bringer of so much joy and yet at the same time so much shame. He says he came up with the idea after people made fun of his own singing. I think he had the last laugh, and may he rest in peace. And finally, on First Move, how to turn a tennis match into a short distance sprint. And trust me, I'm being serious. This was the scene as a swarm of bees descended on the court at Indian Wells. The insects overwhelmed world number two, Carlos Alcaraz. They appeared to attack the umpire too, and then play had to be stopped. Alcaraz, though, would go on to win the match, clearly on his A rather than B game. See what I did there? And that just about wraps up the show. Thank you for joining us. I'll see you next week.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.